Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, head on out and do your old stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your old stuff. You better get up.
Hey everybody, welcome to Congress College. Happy Thanksgiving weekend. I hope you're getting ready to do your turkey, however you like to do your turkey. Do you fry it? Do you bake it? I don't know. Do you rotisserie your chicken? I personally, in the Chris family, we are now turkey fryers, and oh my gosh, it's delicious. But anyway, welcome to Congress College. Hope everybody's well. My name is Elizabeth Christ, and I'm going to be your host for the next 30 minutes on this radio show where, you know what, we spend all the time we can talking about Congress and all things that come out of D.C. I hope you enjoy the show. Congress College airs twice weekly. On the Monday show, which is 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this is when we outline the week in Congress. And what that means is we literally talk about what bills will be coming up in the Senate of the United States and in the House of Representatives. And then on the Friday show, which is same time slot, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, on the Friday show, we recap the week and we talk about what actually got done. What did the Senate of the United States end up debating? How about the House of Representatives? Did they debate what you thought they should? Did they vote what you thought they should? Did they do what they said they were going to do? You know, I say this all the time. We have the greatest representative government in the world, bar none. But it doesn't work really well unless we know what our representatives are up to. Those guys and gals in the Senate, those guys and gals in the House of Representatives, they are representing you. They're representing me. So don't you think we should at least know what they're up to? That's my view, and that's one reason I do the show. Another reason I do Congress College twice weekly is to familiarize folks with the free website, gradegov.com. And of course, if you guessed it, gradegov.com lets you grade a member of Congress. How about your member of Congress? Would you give him or her an A? How about a D? How about an F? And of course, when we talk about gradegov.com, we talk about grading members of Congress with grades just like the grades you got in school, the A, B, C, D, or F. I know I got a couple of Fs along the way. Once you figure out who you want to grade, and once you figure out what grade you want to give them, the site is going to auto-prompt you to write a letter explaining why you gave the grade. It's a free site. It's easy to use. I urge you to tell your friends and family about gradegov.com. I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Let me give a shout-out to those in the chat room. I see from Cuscock from Connecticut. This Monday is his mom's birthday. Well, happy birthday, Mom, from Bob and, you know, your son's friends in Congress College. Ms. Anthony, thank you. Thank you for having an amazing son like Bob, and I want to say happy birthday to you. Okay, let's get started. We're going to start talking about the Senate. The Senate is basically out. They work behind the scenes on the continuing resolution, and of course, that is the bill that funds the federal government past December. It's going to expire the early part of December. And you know what? The Speaker of the House announced, after talking to Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan said that Congress would basically punt on the government spending. They would punt on the funding of the federal government, which expires in December, and they'll pass a bill that will only take it into March. You know, those that listen to Congress College regularly, this is what we said back in September. If the elections go with the Republicans winning the White House, if the elections go with the Republicans keeping the majority, then they'll end up doing a short-term continuing until early spring. Why is that? And you know, oh my gosh, here they go again. No, here's the logic, folks, and it does make a lot of sense. It allows the new president, which of course will be Donald Trump, the new senators, and the new House members to vote on the federal government funding for the rest of the year, which would go to obviously from the beginning of the spring all the way till the end of September. Don't you think they should be the ones voting on what government's funding will be in place when the president takes office? It's just sort of my view. And remember, President-elect Trump has talked about hiring freezes. All of that would be a perfect place to put in the continuing resolution when they consider it in March. So they decided the news is out. They're going to punt. They're going to do another bill when they come back after Thanksgiving, and it's just going to fund the federal government till March. So there you go. When the Senate comes back after the Thanksgiving little break they're going to take, they're going to vote on something called expanding capacity for health outcomes. This is something authored by Senator Hatch, and it is to deal with health care in hard-to-reach areas. They'll use technology in some of the cases. And then, of course, they'll start working on the continuing resolution. All right, let's flip over to the House side. What did they do this week? They voted, what was the vote? 243 to 174. Every one of those 74 came from the Democrats. They voted to stop the ban of Boeing and Airbus to sell planes to Iran. If you remember, we talked about this earlier in the week. We talked about it on Monday. That ban has been in place since the 1970s, 1979, during the Iran hostage situation, the end of the Carter administration. They put a ban on our companies making trades and selling big things to Iran. Well, the Treasury, of course, who I mean by Treasury, I mean Obama's Treasury, has basically given the green light to sell up to 117 planes to allow Boeing and Airbus, the combination of those two companies, to sell up to 117 planes to Iran. Well, the House of Representatives said not so fast, and they passed H.R. 5711 by a vote, as I said, 243 to 174, and that 174 came from Democrats. Let me tell you what else the House of Representatives did this week. On Tuesday, they voted to extend the sanctions on Iran for another 10 years. They voted 419 to 1 to extend Iran's sanctions. The only person that voted against it was Congressman Massey. He's a Republican from Kentucky. This is a vote clearly passed the Senate. And then, of course, it'll go to the White House. And, of course, the current president, President Obama, will likely veto it. Why do it at all? Because it will be something that the new Congress can do between January 3rd and January 20th if they want to, and go ahead and send it to President Trump's desk, and it'll be signed into law. So they're basically doing a trial run. May seem like a waste of time, but it's not. And, you know, those 174 voting against stopping the sale of Boeing selling planes to Iran, they might regret that come next election time. This is what some of the people who were eager to stop the nuclear deal said. The nuclear deal has provided cover for Iran. They have exerted more and more control in Iraq, sending arms to rebels in Yemen, and they continued to support groups like Hezbollah in Israel and antagonizing Israel. All the while, the Obama administration has refused to hold Iran accountable or even call Iran out for violating the nuclear deal by exceeding limits on heavy water. So that's why they voted 419 to 1. I'm going to finish this. Congress needs these sanction authorities to respond to Iran's violation and to check Iran's growing influence in the region. I'm finishing. Sanctions are what brought Iran to the table. They can bring Iran to heel again. So 419 to 1, they extended them. That bill will end up in the Senate when they come back after the Thanksgiving holiday. Okay, what else did the House do? Well, they extended where the House Republicans voted to reelect Speaker Paul Ryan as the Speaker, and the full vote of the House of Representatives will occur when they come back January 3rd. But guess what's going on with the House Democrats? Nancy Pelosi, who is the number one House Democrat, has an opponent now. Congressman Tim Ryan, he's a Democrat from Ohio. He's from a middle-class family in Ohio. Here's the deal, though. He's also middle-aged. Says that Nancy Pelosi doesn't represent the Democratic Party anymore. His announcement set up an immediate battle between Democrats. Some of these House Democrats are really angry at last week's elections. Let's think about this for a minute. First of all, the vote on the House side will be, and this is only House Democrats, will be November 30th. So the week they get back after Thanksgiving, the Wednesday after they get back. Nancy Pelosi needs to get about 98 House Republicans to hold on to her position. You have to get a majority of the House Democrats. Did I say House Republicans? I mean House Democrats. You have to get a majority of House Democrats. So the House Democrat number is 194. So do the math. The majority of them, basically 198. So basically, you've got, 98. You've got to get 100 House Democrats. Tim Ryan, the Democrat from Ohio that is challenging Nancy Pelosi, he's got to get the same, got to get a majority of 194. Think about this, though. The Democratic leadership have Nancy Pelosi, a West Coast liberal, leading the House Democrats in the House of Representatives. And let's flip over to the Senate side. Who's the Senate minority leader? Who's the Democratic leader on the Senate side? Chuck Schumer, a radical East Coaster. He's in his late 60s. Let me say this. Tim Ryan, the Democrat from Ohio, I don't know a lot about him other than he's from Ohio, middle-class family, mid to late 40s. I think Pelosi might have a little run on her money. You know what she's going to end up doing, though? She's going to end up using her dialing for dollars influence to try to gain a majority. But you know what? Let's look at the roadmap in 2018. I know Congress College listeners hate that I'm always looking ahead. They hate that I can't let one election rest without almost going to the other. But 2018, that could be a tough one, especially if Donald Trump has a good first 2 years. Now, what traditionally happens is midterm elections can be hard on a president. Let's go back 2006, George W. Bush, he had trouble and he lost the majority. 2010, well, Barack Obama lost the majority. 2014, lost it again. So Trump could face the same fate, but think about it. If you've got Donald Trump at the helm with some of the amazing people we've already heard about, we're going to talk about his transition in just a minute. You've got the high 20s of Senate Democrats up for re-election. Of course, all of the House of Representatives up for re-election. You've got a little bit of a honeymoon period with Donald Trump. And then what if he does, what if he is able to reverse Obamacare? What if he is able to do some Trump growth and bring jobs back? You know, Republicans know their history. They know that midterms can be difficult on the party that holds the White House. They're not going to ignore that. That's why I think when I talked on Monday about the Cheesehead contingent, that's going to be so important. And for those that couldn't listen on Monday, that's all Wisconsinites. That is Reince Priebus, chief of staff to the White House, Wisconsinite. That's Scott Walker, governor and head of the RGA, where they've got 36 Republican governors. That's Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House of Representatives, Wisconsinite. His chief of staff, Dave Hoppe, from Wisconsin, but a Senate creature. So he brings the Senate along in a lot of ways. So if you've got the Senate and working together through this Wisconsin connection, and you've got the Senate and the House working with the White House through the chief of staff, Reince Priebus, and you've got 36 Republican governors working with the White House through Reince Priebus and Scott Walker, that could be an amazing partnership that could do amazing things the first 2 years. All right, let's talk about the Trump transition. President Obama, just so you know, because it's amazing. I'm always amazed at how the media paints these pictures that just factually are not true. They're talking about the Trump administration off to a bumpy start. They can't get their transition in order, blah, blah, blah. Listen to this. President Obama did not announce his first cabinet pick until 3 weeks after the election. President-elect Trump announced his AG in the name of Jeff Sessions today. We're going to talk about that in a minute. He announced Congressman Pompeo from Kansas as his CIA director. General Mike Flynn as his national security advisor. That does not need confirmation. So President Obama didn't announce his first cabinet pick until he'd been president-elect for 3 weeks. President George W. Bush did not announce his first cabinet pick until 6 weeks after his election. Bill Clinton, 6 weeks after his election. Ronald Reagan, 6 weeks after his election. But Donald Trump, 10 days, 12 days after his election, oh, things are in shambles. They're falling apart. Boy, I tell you what, the mainstream media, they paint pictures that are just blatantly, blatantly false. Let's talk about the Trump transition for a second. Somebody that I have heard is in the big running to be head of, now this is adds that sort of cheesehead connection again, head of the congressional liaison, being the head of the congressional party, congressional liaison, the House and Senate, congressional work, very, very top staffer is Rick Dearborn. He is a chief of staff to Senator Jeff Sessions. He's been there for multiple years. But you know what? He knows Paul Ryan very well. He remembers working with Paul Ryan when he worked for Senator Casten. He actually roomed with Paul Ryan when they did some work back in the 1990s. So running the White House Legislative Affairs is a huge job. If they put Rick Dearborn in charge, I think it'll be amazing because it opens doors. We've talked about that in the context of Paul Laxalt being the insider as far as being the United States Senator for Ronald Reagan back in the day. Paul Laxalt was a former governor of Nevada. Paul Laxalt became friends when they were both governors. And then when Senator Laxalt was in the Senate, he was his eye ears in the Senate and helped the congressional affairs, the White House Legislative Affairs team tremendously. Rick Dearborn could open doors because he already has huge relationships. He has huge relationships with senators, with chiefs of staffs. So I think that could be an amazing thing. Let me also talk for a minute about George Soros. Did you hear about this? George Soros and his liberal billionaire friends are behind an organization of anti-Republican, anti-Trump protests. No big surprise there. In a conference which kicked off Sunday night at the Washington Mandarin Hotel, they ended up talking with leaders of labor unions, liberal groups, as well as Nancy Pelosi and Elizabeth Warren and other people in the Congressional Progressive Caucus. You know, in addition to Nancy Pelosi being currently the head of the Democratic Party on the House side and Chuck Schumer, the heir apparent to be the minority leader on the Senate side, you know, they're seriously looking at Keith Ellison, who's a congressman from Minnesota, a Democratic congressman from Minnesota, who is very, 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 very liberal. He's also a Muslim. Does that represent the middle America? Is that part of the Democrats' problem? You know, another part of the Democrats' problem, and this is very, very apparent, Barack Obama so decimated their bench, so decimated any chance they've got. Now, let's think about this for a minute. Donald Trump and his transition has a whole bunch of people to choose from. There are so many Republicans, good Republicans out there that are capable of doing all sorts of things. Think about it. Remember when we had our candidacies for president at the beginning, all of our primaries, there were 16 or 17 of them, a few women. And then you had all of those men, that bench that is so rich, so full, and Donald Trump can tap every one of them, and very capable Republican senators, very capable Republican House members, as we're seeing him tapping today with Senator Sessions and Congressman Pompeo. But governors, let's not forget he's got governors. There are 30-some Republican governors. When Barack Obama took office, the Republicans had 21 Republican governors. Now they have high 30s. When Barack Obama took office, Senate majority was run by the Democrats. There were 60 senators. Now they don't even have 50. They had a House majority, the Democrats' House majority. He's killed their bench. They don't have the people to choose from. All right, I'm going to flip over here because I've got to I love playing this. We got to thank Harry Reid. We've got to thank Harry Reid for allowing Donald Trump to have an easier time picking his cabinet, because he doesn't have to walk across the aisle at all. Maybe even call Chuck Schumer and say, what do you think of so-and-so? Call some couple of moderate Democrat senators, like maybe Joe Manchin, because he doesn't need 60 votes in the United States Senate anymore to confirm cabinet nominees. He only needs a majority. This is what was done 3 years ago by Senator Harry Reid. Take a listen to this. Well, I don't know if it's going to play. Can't tell if it's playing or not. Well, basically, it was the history of Harry Reid. There we go.
The rules of the filibuster, as we know it, are changed in the U.S. Senate. Democrats went with the so-called nuclear option with a 52-48 vote Thursday.
What we're talking about here, what that nuclear option is to prevent the minority effectively from waging a filibuster that Democrats, in this case, or the majority, can't overcome.
A New York Times article calls it the most fundamental shift in Senate function we've seen in more than a generation. Writer Jeremy W. Peters described the vote as one members of both parties had threatened for the better part of a decade, but it always stopped short of carrying out. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid led the charge, which changes the number of votes required to advance a nomination or appointment from 60 to 51, thus lessening the power of the filibuster.
It's time to change. It's time to change the Senate before this institution becomes obsolete.
But Harry Reid was able to get the majority that he needed here from his Democratic base. Republicans are saying this is a Democratic attempt to distract from the problems related to the president's health care law, that this is unprecedented.
In a statement after the vote, President Obama applauded the Senate's move. Some Democrats did vote against it, but the Washington Post notes it went mostly along party lines, reversing nearly 225 years of precedent and dramatically altering the landscape for both Democratic and Republican presidents. Fox News calls it a risky move for Democrats and a 180 for Reid.
It could hurt Democrats next time they become the minority. In fact, when they were the minority, he complained that the nuclear option would be a very bad idea.
That's technically true. In 2005, Reid opposed a similar attempt by Republicans. Thursday's motion was spurred when Reid asked for reconsideration of a D.C. District judicial nominee who'd recently been blocked by a Republican filibuster. For Newsy, I'm Jamal Andrews.
There you go. So thank you, Harry Reid. Thank you, Harry Reid, because Donald Trump can basically nominate almost whoever he wants, and all he needs is 50 votes. All he needs is 50 votes. If it's 50-50, Vice President Pence can break the tie. All right, let's think about this for a second. We just talked about how the Democrats' bench is completely decimated. They don't have anybody waiting in the wings. I believe the Clinton family is done. But here's something else to think about. If Donald Trump starts out in an amazing way, uses the honeymoon period, then builds from that, has a few big wins at the very beginning. We're going to have a test of what 2018 is going to be like. And here's why. November of 2017. In other words, a year from now, there are two gubernatorial races. New Jersey, Chris Christie, presumably running for re-election, if assuming he does, and the Virginia governor. Those are going to be tests. We're going to be able to see if Republicans take those or if Democrats take them. What is the mood of, in this case, East Coast and Virginia? There's also a couple of mayors, more than a couple. These are biggies. We could also see if there is some kind of wave coming out of the Donald Trump administration. He will have been in a year. Here are the mayors up for election: Atlanta, Boston, Buffalo, New York, Charlotte, Cincinnati, LA, Minneapolis, San Bernardino, and Seattle. So we're going to have a test, folks. We're going to be able to test Donald Trump's mettle, if you will, how he's doing. He will have a test in November, exactly a year from now, pretty much. We'll be able to see how he's doing. So Harry Reid, thank you very much. Harry Reid, thank you very much, so that Donald Trump can nominate. And I know the Senate will confirm Senator Jeff Sessions. What an amazing senator. What an amazing, amazing man. I am so happy for the Sessions family. I am so happy for the Sessions congressional family, the Senate family, for Rick Dearborn, for everybody that knows Senator Sessions. It is an amazing, wonderful, wonderful thing. Thank you, Harry Reid, for making it so easy for Donald Trump to nominate Senator Jeff Sessions. Thank you, Harry Reid, for making it so easy for Donald Trump to nominate Congressman Pompeo to be CIA director. These two men might have had an issue if they needed 60 votes. Senator Sessions had some problems when he was first to be a federal judge. His nomination was actually defeated in the Senate Judiciary Committee. And guess what he did? Ronald Reagan nominated him. His nomination was defeated. And guess what Senator Sessions did? Then he was a district attorney, I believe. He up and ran for the United States Senate, and he's been the senator from Alabama ever since. So attaboy, Senator Sessions, very proud of you. Proud to call you a friend. So happy for you. Happy for Congressman Pompeo. And let's all say thank you to Harry Reid. I'm going to leave you with a Celine Dion song. It's called Thank You. Have a great weekend. I'll do a show on Monday. Then I won't do one on Friday. Having fun with my family for Thanksgiving. Thank you for enjoying Celine Dion. Thank you. Have a blessed week. Talk to you on Monday. Thank you.
Just a friendly face, or maybe just a smile, someone that understands what I'm going through right now. And just before I lay me down to never wake, I look up and I see you. So with everything I am, thank you. Thank you. Oh, 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 oh. Thank you. With everything I am. Thank you. For the real sacrifice and the truth behind your giving heart, and how you'd never judge a fault in me. Help, because you want it to. And for your friendly face, and for just your smile, simply understanding what I'm going through right now. And just before I lay me down to